Zimbabwe has one of the world's most serious humanitarian crises. The economy is at a standstill. The currency is worthless. Most of its population requires outside food aid to survive. And the country's healthcare system has all but collapsed. That description alone gives an idea of the gravity of the situation facing this African country, which also has one of the world's lowest life expectancies. But despite this desperate situation, Zimbabwe's inhabitants are showing amazing resilience, courage, and resolve. Catholic Relief Services, or CRS, is one of the many aid groups working hard to alleviate the suffering of Zimbabweans by providing food, healthcare, and a variety of other vital services. The programs CRS support feed over 1.2 million people in Zimbabwe. Bishop Kevin Boland of Savannah in the US recently visited Zimbabwe with the president of CRS to see at first hand the suffering of its people and what has been done to help them. He spoke to me about his impressions.
The people are suffering greatly from material want and from educational point of view and from health care. The whole country, in a sense, is, I would say, in a state of crisis with regard to the very basics of living from day to day. And in spite of that, I found great resilience in the people and, in a sense, a great sense of joy in welcoming us and recognizing that we were trying to do something to alleviate their situation, even though the broad picture, it would be very little compared with their great need.
One of the most dramatic aspects in Zimbabwe is the almost total collapse of the healthcare system, which was once one of Africa's best, with hospitals apparently no longer functioning, often even empty. What evidence did you see of this collapse?
Well, in the city of Harare itself, we were told that one of the hospitals is completely boarded up and that the other major hospital for a city of over 1 million people was very inadequately staffed and barely able to meet some needs of some of the people, but certainly not enough to address the needs of a city that large. Out in the rural areas where we visited, very meager facilities there and doctors who are basically giving their services free almost because of the great inflation in that country and the value of money is really literally nothing. And without these types of volunteers, both of nurses and doctors, these people would get very, very little. And they have no equipment, hardly whatsoever, to help in the...
When you say no equipment, I mean, what were some of the most basic things that were lacking? Can you tell us?
Well, one of the things that Catholic Relief Services is trying to bring about, for example, is a water filtration system, just to make sure that the drinking water is safe to drink, that there are areas where they just do not have that. And the systems that Catholic Relief Services are providing are very basic outdoor filtering systems that will give enough maybe for drinking water, but not much more than that. And these would not be available in many of the clinics or places where they give health care.
And what was the mood of these doctors and this nursing staff working in, as you say, these extremely difficult situations?
Their mood was upbeat, we'll do the best we can, grateful for what they've had, even though they know they need a lot more to be able to improve the situation. And I would say that their attitude was such because it had become kind of, in the best sense of the word, this is our mission, this is what we'll try to do to give service to the people. So it was totally humanitarian in its outreach, you know, that these are people who need medical care. We're going to do the best we can with it. And there was always a fear, you know, that they could get burnt out because the needs are so colossal. Where do you begin and where do you end? It could easily lead to a kind of a despair, you know, for those who are providing this service because they can make so little dent, as it were, in what they can do.
And you said that these are basically working as volunteers. They're not getting any money or extremely little. I mean, how are they coping financially? How are they surviving themselves?
This I don't know. That's a very, very good question because the same thing is applicable to the educational system. The teachers, when we were there, were all on strike for many, many months. And the reason they were on strike is that they were only getting the equivalency of a couple of dollars a month for the teaching, and they themselves could not live in that. So they would have left and tried to get different type of work to support themselves and their families. And I hadn't seen this verified, but I was told there's a brain drain there too, because a lot of these qualified people have left the country and gone to perhaps to the neighbouring countries in order to support themselves.
And when it comes to the children, are a lot of them then missing out on their schooling at the moment?
They're missing out greatly on their schooling. We visited several places where there are lots of volunteers, old retired teachers, and they would gather the children at the school buildings, even though regular school, we were at one or two places where the regular school was taking place. And they were very, very impressive. But then we were at other places where they would just be at a community center. I participated in teaching in one class, outdoor class, where the children would sit around and what they had was one copybook and a pencil. That was the totality of what they had. And they were trying to teach them three subjects, the English language, Shoal, the Zimbabwe language, and some math or arithmetic and basic arithmetic. And they said, now we would like them to at least try to keep up with this so that when the schools do come back, these children won't be completely at a loss.
I gather that Catholic Relief Services, though, is helping where it can in providing, for instance, a daily hot lunch to some of these children who attend these schools. How important is that lunch and how important is that aid?
Oh, that aid is essential. The first visit I made outside the city of Harare, about an hour and a half outside the city, was to a school where school is not being held right now, but there was about 500 to 600 children, maybe more. They were expecting us, so they had them all well organized and all sitting in one place. They put on a little playlist of welcoming us and sang songs and played in one of their instruments. This would be a daily happening, that all these children would come here, and CRS is supplying the food, which is basically cornmeal and beans, and the children bring with them a plate and a spoon. For many of them, that is the only meal they will get that day. That is their daily school situation. There's no teaching taking place whatsoever.
When you talk to some of these people, you mentioned earlier about the people, how resilient they seemed. But did you also sometimes get the impression there was some anger, or perhaps people were just fed up and they wanted to leave the country? Or were most of them prepared to stick it out, perhaps because they had no chance of leaving?
I would say it's the latter one, that they have no chance, you know, that they have so little that for them to leave, they would not know where to go or where they would hope to get work or accommodations upon leaving. I did not perceive any anger, you know, or deep resentment, but a kind of perhaps we look for the day when this thing will get better, and they have a remembrance maybe of the early days that things were better one time, but that they've now completely collapsed. And they recognize that their system of living is just non-existent, kind of. And at the same time, they still keep going. I don't know how. I don't know. I can't answer it, except there must be deep within them, you know, this is our land. We want to stay here. And prayerfully, things will turn around for a better tomorrow. You know,
talking about the hope that things will be better tomorrow, do they believe that things will get better with the power-sharing government? Is there any hope surrounding that?
There is hopes. Obviously, anything like that, when it happens, they express hope that maybe this will work. But experientially, they also know that so many times their hopes have been shattered, because on the surface it seems to work, but then in the ensuing months and weeks, it all seems to collapse again. And so whether the power sharing will work or not, obviously it's a move in the right direction. And hopefully it would work, because that is the only way any country can get along, is that there is a need to serve the needs of the people, which is the role of government anyhow.
So when you left the country, what do you think? Is there any one particular incident, any one particular sight or an anecdote that you heard that has become your abiding memory?
There are several abiding memories. One was going to an orphanage so many parents have died of AIDS, leaving an awful lot of orphans in different parts of Zimbabwe. And we visited one of these places, which was started by a lady on her own resolve of taking in 8 children who had no parents. And now she has an orphanage with 80 children. At this particular orphanage, before we left, these young people sang songs for us and put on a dance for us that they had pre-prepared. You cannot but forget it. Here are young people. You wonder what their future is as they grow into adulthood and they leave that orphanage. What their opportunities are seem to be so minimal. And at the same time, the joy of the people who are running it, there's 2 or 3 people running this place. It's just mind-boggling, their satisfaction that they're able to do this for these children, in spite of the great odds against them.
I was speaking there to Bishop Kevin Boland of Savannah,